Hey guys, it's Kathy. I just wanted to tell you all about a couple of resources that you may be interested in. First is the weekly newsletter called the FUMS Friday Night Six Pack. It goes out at 5 p.m. Eastern every Friday because it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? It contains links to the top six happenings in the world of MS that week. Another great email list to sign up for, the Patients Getting Paid list. I'm working on an online course for those of us in the chronic community that either lost our jobs and need some flexible opportunities or that just want to supplement their existing income. Think being able to work from an infusion center or home or wherever and getting paid. If that sounds like something you might be interested in learning more about, sign up at fumsnow.com/patientsgettingpaid, and I'll let you know as soon as I launch that course. Thanks, everybody, and FUMS. Welcome to the FUMS Now podcast show, where you'll gain information, inspiration, and motivation for living your best life with multiple sclerosis. Find us online at fumsnow.com. I'm your host, Kathy Reagan Young. Hey there. I want to welcome you to a special series I'm doing here on the pod. It occurred to me that people living outside of the U.S. may have very different diagnosis and treatment stories from ours here at home. So, I went in search of folks to share their stories. And boy, was I right. It's a completely different scenario than what we're used to here. Let me warn you, you're likely going to want to move. Today, my guest is Steve Woodward, a fellow MSer that I met last year in Philly at a conference for contributors at Health Union. He and I giggled together inappropriately for a couple of days, and I knew we'd be friends beyond that conference, and sure enough, we are. And in fact, he's my amazing podcast editor now. He's a father, a husband, a music nerd for sure, an arts marketer who lives at the furthest point from the sea in the middle of England. He was diagnosed with MS in 2005 and has been writing online about his life for the last 10 years, both on his own blog, It's a Shit Business, see why we get along so well, and as an international contributor at multiplesclerosis.net. I adore him, and I think you will too. He's the perfect person to kick off this series on international MS diagnosis and treatment. Let me introduce to you my friend and teammate, Steve Woodward. So, hi, Steve. Thanks so much for being here with me today.
No problem, Kathy. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to chat with you as well. So, yeah, if you wouldn't mind, just go into kind of what kind of symptoms you started with first, and when did you notice them?
Oh, it was probably about 20 years ago. Wow. It's probably very similar to a lot of people's symptoms. It was kind of just weird things happening that were easily explainable, mostly pins and needles and kind of hypersensitivity or a lack of sensitivity in my fingers and in my feet, which kind of spread up my legs and into my torso. And I went to see my doctor, and they said, oh, it's like a trapped nerve or sciatica or something like that. You need to do some yoga, and which was great. Do some yoga. Yoga's very good. And that kind of helped. And then that it came back probably a couple of years later. I went to see the doctor. They said, it's sciatica or it's a trapped nerve. Do some more yoga. And then it passed. And then I think it was like the third attempt, I went to see a doctor, and he said, okay, This keeps happening. It's either I'm going to send you to a physio, and then I'll make an appointment with a neurologist, and we'll get to the bottom of it. And myself and Emma, my wife, we were kind of probably a little bit blind and a little bit green about it, because we just said, well, it's going to be something physical. What could it possibly be?
Right.
To be neurological.
Right.
So then we went to see the physio, and the guy said, well, I can clearly tell it's nothing physical. It's going to be something neurological. And we were kind of flailing around a bit. And we just said, well, what's it going to be? And he said, I don't want to tell you. And he said, to give us an idea what it could be. And he said, well, it could be multiple sclerosis. And that was the first time that had been mentioned to us. Now, prior to that, our only experience of someone with MS was a colleague of ours and a friend whose mother had very, very progressive MS and who died a couple of years before.
Great. So that was what sprang to mind for you.
Yeah. So of course. We completely lost our shit, really. So, yeah. Then I was waiting for the appointment for the neurologist. I went to the neurologist, had an MRI scan, and obviously, you know, I told him the backstory of the, you know, these symptoms keep coming back. Mm-hmm. It was like every year, every couple of years, and obviously with that sort of story and the MRI scan and seeing the activity, he said, "Well, this is what it is." Mm-hmm. But in a way, you know, the physio who actually planted that seed in our minds did us a favor, because if he'd not said that, we'd have just been like
blindsided. Well,
whereas by that point we were just sort of okay, this is what it is,
right? You were prepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, you know, it's still, you know, obviously it's not like we'd just went, everything's fine. I've got it. Woo-hoo! Jackpot. But it was kind of, you know, it was it's just what it was, and, right. And that's kind of the symptom that we had, really. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm really interested in this series, as you know. I'm really trying to figure out sort of what the different countries' diagnosis and treatment protocols for MS are. And so, you were able to just call a doctor and say, mm-hmm. "I need to come in." And then they eventually referred you to a specialist, like a neurologist.
Yeah.
So who actually schedules the testing then? Was it the neurologist? Like the MRI?
Now, the thing that's a little bit complicated about my story is I went to see what we call it, you know, do you call them GPs over there?
General practitioners?
Primary care physicians.
Yep.
Okay. So I went to see my doctor and, you know, he sort of like said, right, okay, here's a physio. Go and see them. I'll make an appointment with a neurologist. And it was sort of the physio. He dropped the MS bombshell. Mm-hmm. And then I was waiting. And I think I got an appointment for a neurologist. And it was a long way off. Mm-hmm. Now, my dad at that point was working. Mm-hmm. And he was paying into private healthcare for the family. And he said, look, if you want to get this sorted, because obviously we told them about, you know, it could be this. Let's get it sorted. So I went private.
Gotcha.
To have the neurologist tests.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I got the diagnosis, I was plugged straight back into the, you know, the lovely NHS, National Health Service.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is the doctor that I saw going private, I saw him in, you know, basically it's the same doctors working private and working on the National Health Service.
Okay.
And I was plugged straight back into a specialist neurologist team and dedicated multiple sclerosis nurses. That's just the way the NHS works, really.
Okay, so it works well, except that it's super slow to get to see people. Would you say that's true?
Well, in some respects, it can be quite slow. There are a lot of demands on the NHS. Mm-hmm. The whole point of the NHS is that basically there's three principles behind it. One that is that it meets the needs of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Two is that it's free at the point of need.
Mm-hmm.
And at the point of delivery, so it is free.
Nice.
And that it's based on clinical need, not an ability to pay. So that's the great thing about the NHS. It's like you can see someone and you'll get passed on to the right people.
Mm-hmm.
The delay in having my MRI scan was just a little bit too much for us to take.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of bailed on it. But since then, all of my MRI scans and treatments have been paid for.
Yeah.
So no real cost to me.
Ugh.
So I mean, it was interesting when we met in Philadelphia. A lot of people were asking me questions. Oh, how does it? Oh, the NHS, or you know, or immigration, and you know, it's not really working. It's like the NHS, it does work.
Yeah.
And without immigration, we wouldn't have anybody working in the NHS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know what I mean? All the neurologists are Greek. I don't know why.
That's interesting.
It is weird, and I'm lucky that I live near a place called Nottingham, and there's a very, very advanced neurology department in the hospital in Nottingham, and so I'm kind of with these guys, and they know me, and you know, I see the same neurologist every time, and then I see the MS nurses whenever I need to, and that is. You know, I've been paying tax, you know, since I've been able to work, and I've been paying national insurance contributions since I've been able to work, and basically that means I've put into the system, and you know, and I can draw it down when I need to. But it's not like it's ticking off and going, right, actually, you need to do a bit more work to pay for your healthcare. I mean, that's just kind of the way it goes. But you know, MRIs are free. Neurologist appointments are free. And all of my MS medication is free.
So I know that all the listeners of the FUMS podcast that are American, their heads just popped off at the thought of that. Like, what? Oh my gosh! Yeah. Just imagine. Yeah, because as we talked about in Philly, you know, we obviously don't enjoy any of that. And so the stress that is involved in just having to pay for this stuff when you're talking about something that's, you know, $65,000, for instance, is just, you know, and the first thing they tell you is stress is the worst thing for you. Try to limit your stress. Now you owe us $12,000.
I mean, I was talking to a lot of people in Philly, and you know, there was somebody I was talking to, and she was saying that she has to make a decision whether to kind of buy her treatment or feed her kids.
Yeah,
and that's just, that was boggling for me. And you know, we are sort of like living in what is viewed as the socialist nightmare of free healthcare.
But, yeah, you know, it sounds seriously horrible, Steve.
It sounds horrific. But you know, I didn't go straight onto a disease modifying treatment because it was back in the days of just, you know, eat healthily and do some exercise, and we'll see how you get on. And I think that's changed a lot recently. But you know, after a few years, I had a couple of relapses, and they decided to start me on Rebif, like beta interferon, and I did that for a bit, and then I got needle fatigue, so I did Tecfidera. That was okay, and then I had two relapses on the bounce, and then I've been on Tysabri, which is what I'm on at the moment, and I know how much Tysabri costs. It's something like £1,400, and you've got that every month, and it's paid for.
Yeah,
you know, I think the NHS is funded. I think it's something like 99% comes through taxation and national insurance contributions, and the rest is from prescription items. Now, basically, that wonderful word comorbidity. You know, I've got a few of those. I've got you know tablets for this, tablets for that, and it's kind of, I have to pay a prescription charge to get those items, but that's something like, I think it's something like £9 every time I get a prescription for something like, you know, mebeverine for, you know, bowel stuff and stuff for the bladder and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's kind of what I pay for.
Right. That's incredible. From where I sit, that's really, really incredible. You mentioned that when you were waiting to get your diagnosis and were looking to get an MRI, you your dad had private insurance. So that's an option. You can pay in private insurance, right? So the interesting part of that, well, there's lots of interesting things about that to me, but one of which is that you are a grown-ass man, and you could still get on your dad's private insurance at that point?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it until I needed it. He just said it was something that he got through work. I mean, how old was I? Must have been 30 something.
Yeah.
And he was still paying for myself and my brother on the private healthcare thing.
Wow.
And it was kind of, it was easy, basically, it was purely for the speed of it.
Yeah.
That's the private amazing. Healthcare. Yeah.
Do you have any sense of how much that is, private healthcare? Or is it, does it differ based on what things are covered?
I've got to be honest, I'm not really sure. All I know is that with this particular private healthcare, we had to pay it up front and then claim it back. So I know that my MRI cost something like £800 because I paid for it on my credit card and then we got the money back.
Gotcha.
But you see, now if you're calling me a grown-ass man, that's making me feel quite guilty. I'm feeling a bit of a loser.
That was not my intention. The point of that is because in America, we have been extended the opportunity to keep our kids on our health care, on our private health care, until age 26, which was a great opportunity and a great relief to a lot of us. You know, our kids finish school and then they might either not be able to get a job or they might get a job that doesn't have insurance. And it's just nice to be able to include them for a time. But so my point was not, you're a grown ass man. What the hell were you doing on your dad's insurance? Rather, it was how wonderful that your country extends that opportunity to families.
Yeah.
That's the point.
It was a scheme that you paid into, and he thought, right, you know, and then like when I got married and when we had a daughter, my dad said, just so you know, I've never paid for Emma and I'm not paying for Evie, my daughter. You know, I'm not, that's not happening. But which again, that makes him sound bad. So, I'm just a ball of guilt, Kathy.
Oh, I hear that in your voice. We need to work on that. But that was not certainly my intention. The point is, your country is more forward thinking in terms of healthcare is a family issue. It's not an individualized thing, and everyone can help everyone. And it's just a much, where do I sign up is what I want to ask. It's quite different.
I mean, there are problems with the NHS. It's always been a bit of a political ball, effectively, that gets played with ever since its inception, which is like 71 years ago. There are problems with funding and there are a lot of people using those resources, but that's the guiding principle is it is for everyone. You can't say it's for these people. The guy who set it up is, what's his name?
Mr. Wonderful.
Mr. Amazing. And you're in Bevan. Which is a great name.
That is a great name.
I think it's Welsh. And he kind of set it up, and his whole thing was, you know, they said, "Oh, what about people who are coming to this country?" And he said, "Well, you can't, you know, then basically, it's you basically, you know, you, you know, proper inverted commas UK citizens will need to carry a card, and everyone else will need to carry a card, and then it just turns into, you know, we just finished the Second World War 3 years before, and we don't want to kind of go down that route, it is for everyone,
Beautiful.
You know, it's it is It's a great thing, but as I say, you know, it's woefully underfunded. Mm-hmm. Doctors and nurses aren't really paid enough for the amount mm-hmm. of work that they do. They're overworked. You know, mm-hmm. I think there was something mm-hmm. I think emergency rooms, they found out that on average are light of 12 nurses. So they're missing 12 nurses wow. in order for mm-hmm. them to do their jobs. And that's every emergency room in the UK. Yeah. And, you know, as I say, it's always been a bit of a political plaything, and people mm-hmm. will kind of go, oh, I'm doing this for the NHS and I'm going to do this for the NHS. Mm-hmm. But I think people, you know, the majority of people just appreciate it for what it is, and mm-hmm. and you know, and the care is good.
That's awesome. So
Touch wood.
Sure, there's there's issues, but it does what it's supposed to in providing care for those who need it when they need it, and you don't have to decide whether you're gonna feed Evie or get a treatment. That's awesome. Do these things, are ancillary services or treatments included? Like, can you get massage therapy or cryotherapy or exercise therapy or nutritional counseling, anything like that? Or is that totally on you to pay for?
Again, this is probably one of the issues of the NHS. You do have to do quite a lot of research. And, you know, people aren't, I mean, I guess if you're in a kind of a free market economy, you know, they'll be able to go, oh yes, these people, and you go to these, and you can mm-hmm. go to these, and you can pay for this. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's a lot of stuff that you need to find out for yourself and say, can I have this? Mm-hmm. For example, I've had a few rounds of cognitive behavioral therapy, mm-hmm. which was free to me, and physiotherapy when I have that is free to me, and you know, there are, you know, I don't know about, you know, what's that, cryo?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's, yeah. You get into, do you know what that is?
Yeah, I think I do, but
get into the chamber, uh-huh. potentially of death. I don't know. It looks scary as hell to me. I'm going to do it, though. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to videotape myself doing it. I don't know what's wrong with me, but it's for the FUMS nation, so I'll do anything for them.
Yeah,
anyway, you get into this thing, just your head peeking out, uh-huh. and I don't remember, I don't think I want to know what degree it goes down to of just sub-zero freezing ass cold, but... it's supposed to really make a huge difference in inflammation. Mm-hmm. And so you can see how that would help with MS.
Yeah. Sorry, I've heard of that, yeah. I mean, the oxygen therapy, and there are places where you can get that kind of thing.
Right.
And I think, there might be like a nominal charge for that kind of thing.
Okay.
But pretty much aside from, you know, prescription charges and things like that, it's all kind of... it's free, and the £1,400 every 4 weeks for a bag of Thai Sabri, that's covered. Yeah. So,
that's
it's kind of, I don't want to kind of go, oh, wow, I want a free nutritional advice.
Right. Well, and if you were to do some of these other things, like nutritional advice, whatever, is that something that a doctor needs to write a prescription for, or you just decide, like, I think I would benefit from whatever, massage therapy today, I can just go get that? Or do you need somebody to write a script?
No, not necessarily. I mean, it's probably more, I would have a discussion with the MS nurses who I see every 4 weeks, or a neurologist who I see once a year, or I could just see my GP and said, right, okay, where do I find out about this? Do you think it's worth doing? And they would say, yeah, that's fine. You know, and they can refer you. You know, I wasn't so much referred for the cognitive behavioral therapy. They just said, there's this, you want to get in touch with them. And, but certainly as far as physiotherapy is concerned, it's like, I'll go and see my doctor and they will refer me to the physio. And, you know, I went to see the doctor, they referred me to the wheelchair service. They got in touch with me. And then, you know, when I have got one of those, like a TENS machine for your legs, so when your legs dragging, it fires. What's it called? Man.
Yep, I know.
FES, functional electrical stimulation. There you go.
Gotcha.
And that was, you know, I was referred to the Gate Laboratory, and then I got an FES, which didn't cost me anything.
Mm. Beautiful.
Because I think I wrote something about getting the FAS on the Health Union website, and someone left a comment saying, I could never afford one of those. And I just thought, oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah. I forgot. Lucky that I can just go
right
and get it, and mm-hmm. it comes back to me, and it's a bit. I mean, it's not the sexiest piece of equipment, but it looks a bit right. sort of looks a bit. You know the phrase Heath Robinson?
No,
it basically means something that looks like it's been thrown together. It looks a bit sort of like 1960s Eastern Bloc technology at its
gotcha.
Finest, yeah. mm-hmm. but it does the job.
So how does like diagnosis and treatment work in terms of work there? So are mm. you immediately medically retired? I mean, do you keep it quiet, like for fear of losing your job, or is it wide open?
No, it's like I say, I was diagnosed when, back in the golden days of just eat something healthy, right. give us a call if you need us, And yeah. I think now the neurologists, I don't know if this is the case in the States or anywhere else, but certainly the neurology team where I'm at, they say, right, you've been diagnosed. We recommend you start one of the more aggressive treatments, mm-hmm. like a Tysabri or a Lemtrada, something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And you really go for it because it has, they think it has better long-term effects rather right. than just kind of doing the whole wait and see,
yeah.
which was what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And, my symptoms when I was first diagnosed were fairly innocuous. Mm-hmm. On the whole, it wasn't something that I felt I needed to kind of have a big disclosure
mm-hmm.
type yeah. shebang.
It wasn't going to affect your work, right?
No, not so much. Yeah. No. I mean, I think probably at my last proper full-time job, I think on the second day I was there, I had a quiet word with my boss and said, right, I'm just going to tell you this, but mm-hmm. it doesn't really affect me, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. But it's not so much a kind of case of being medically retired. I guess it's probably a bit more of the kind of wait and see, just kind of
mm-hmm.
certainly in my case, it kind of helped to tell people on a kind of a need to know sort of basis. There was mm-hmm. there was a period when I had in my last proper job, I was working full time as a kind of head of marketing at an arts venue, and I had a couple of relapses within a year. And obviously people were asking questions, what's going on with Steve? And then my boss said, I think when you do come back, I think you need to tell people mm-hmm. because it's just getting to be just a series of mm-hmm. questions. But I know that some people kind of, if they do disclose, then basically they're out of a job.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we are covered by, it used to be called the Disability Discrimination Act, mm-hmm. and now it's the Equalities Act, which okay. basically means anyone who has a disability or a disabling health condition cannot be discriminated against. Mm-hmm. Now, that's what the law says, but you know what?
Businesses right.
can,
sure.
Tough to prove those things. Businesses will find a way. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Wow. So are you given a certain, and by you, I'm, placing your entire country on your shoulders. Are you given a certain amount of time off, like from your job, to attend to things like tests and treatments and doctor's visits without penalty? Or is that all on, like, for instance, here, you might get 2 or 3 weeks off over the course of the year to do as you see fit, if it's for doctor's visits, dental visits, or vacation, whatever.
Mm.
How does that work there?
Well, in my instance, it's basically, I would get sort of like 3 or 4 weeks off paid holiday for the year, mm-hmm. but my doctor's appointments didn't really come out of that. So for as far as a doctor's or a dentist appointment, I'd just kind of nip out and I'd make the hours up. Mm-hmm. For, an annual neurologist appointment, it was, this is the day I'm going to the doctor's, I'm going to be out all day. And it was just kind of, that's what I had to do. And it was just kind of allowed. Mm. I'm not entirely confident to say it's the same everywhere in this country.
Right, sure.
Mm-hmm. It's like this beautiful utopia where everyone's incredibly understanding and, nothing costs you anything. And you can have as much time off as you want to go to the doctors.
Right. I got it. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
What is your future like in terms of financial security? What I'm trying to really get to, I don't want to get that personal with you, but my question is about, for instance, we have here long-term health insurance that you can get, long-term care insurance, right?
Yeah.
Well, once you've been diagnosed with something, you can kiss that goodbye. Who's going to extend that to you? You may be able to get it, but you're really going to have to pay a lot for it. And so it comes down to either you have thought ahead of time when you're younger to have gotten it, mm-hmm. or you've been saving a lot to be able to pay for things later that you're going to need. And I'm just wondering how that works there.
Yeah, you know, they have this thing called critical illness insurance,
okay.
Which I think is probably one of the things you can get when if you get a mortgage, things like that. And you can kind of pay into that, and that will cover, you know, and it will kind of pay out if you get a diagnosis of something like MS.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, speaking personally, we kind of, you know, been sort of like lucky in a lot of ways, been unlucky in a lot of ways in that, you know, when I was diagnosed, my wife and I, we were renting, which means if we kind of apply for a mortgage, we can't get that sort of critical illness thing, or I can, but it will cover everything apart from MS,
mm-hmm.
which is the thing that's going to kind of, is the thing that's going to kind of kick me in the ass.
Yeah. Irony.
And it's same with, you know, travel insurance. You know, it's just going to cover everything apart from the thing that's probably going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. And like I say, I'm doing a lot of freelance work at the moment, and that's, you know, it is what it is. And financially, it's a little bit precarious, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I don't have to go to work 5 days a week and work 37 and a half hours, 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know, is good for me, and wherever possible, I can do some work from home. And you know, it's kind of that's kind of good for me. So, you know, sort of having to make a little bit of peace with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as social security type benefits,
yeah.
We used to have this thing called disability living allowance, which kind of, you know, gave you an amount based on your level of need, because, you know, even accepting the fact that the National Health Service will pay for a lot of your care, being disabled and having a chronic illness is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, you know, I have to drive to more places than you know, inverted
right.
commas, normal person would.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are sort of like ongoing costs. And the disability living allowance is there to kind of, was there to kind of pay for those things, and
mm-hmm.
probably will mean nothing to anybody apart from people in the UK, but that's been phased out and it's been replaced by something called personal independence payment,
mm-hmm.
PIP. So it's like gone from an allowance, which sounds like you're being doled out some charity, to mm-hmm. a payment.
Mm-hmm.
So you earn it because you are worth it. But the thing is, it's a very, very controversial system. Obviously, I've moved on from disability living allowance, and I was told to apply for PIP. You know, my disability living allowance was a lifetime settlement, and then PIP is, you know, I had to apply for PIP, and they said, no, you don't deserve it.
What?
Yeah. And they do these things where you get assessed face to face. And mm-hmm. when I was being assessed, I was in the second week of two massive relapses.
Mm-hmm.
I was unable to move, and they saw me and they said, this person can walk 250 meters. And it's like, okay, well, I'm sitting down, and I was sat in a wheelchair. So I had to apply for that twice and threatened to go to a tribunal. And, you know, it's a very controversial change of system. But, you know, it's the main thing I got from applying for PIT was that I'm incredibly lucky. I'm incredibly lucky because I've got, you know, a very supportive wife and a very supportive family. I've got people around me that will kind of help me out. And I know that there are a lot of people that are applying for these things, and it is a kind of, it's not a game, but you have to kind of,
But you got to play it.
You got to play it a little bit. And I think there are some people who are having to apply for this
mm-hmm.
who, you know, myself and Emma, we like to think we're relatively intelligent people, and you know, we're well educated, mm-hmm. and we found it incredibly difficult to fuse forms in. And you know what I mean? And yeah. it's kind of what somebody who's got no support network.
Right.
Somebody, whose first language is not necessarily English.
Right.
And they've got to go for this thing and they need it. And they're not going to get it.
I think that all the time. Especially older people here.
Yeah.
I've been fighting a stupid, stupid insurance bill that, I mean, honestly, my husband's like, just write the damn check, because I've been fighting it for a year. It's $132, but it's the principle of the thing. It is absolutely ridiculous. The amount of time and energy and stress this thing has caused me, and I'm well educated. I know how to do research. I'm not afraid to pick up a phone and call a CEO, that sort of thing. That's me. That does not describe a lot of our elderly population. So I always think, what happens to these people who can't do this for themselves? It's just awful. Yeah. So I'm well acquainted with that thinking. Like, why would you do that to these people? Only certain people are even going to be equipped to apply and push to get this through.
Yeah. I mean, personal independence payment was brought in to save money, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had two face-to-face assessments that were done by a company that was employed by the Department of Work Pensions. So that's a government department is outsourcing these assessments to a different company. Mm. And, you know, if you were cynical...
Okay.
And I'm going to leave that hanging. If you were a cynical person, then you would think that maybe these companies are being paid by results.
Mm-hmm.
And they have possibly a quota of how many people that they are permitted to allow onto personal independence payment. You know,
gotcha. So there's an incentive to perhaps
possibly
say no.
Yeah, and it's also not very joined up. You've got I don't really want to kind of, I could talk about PIP for hours, because it was a year of my life, a year and a half of my life before, you know.
Yeah.
The whole thing about saving costs is I've had two assessments that were outsourced to a different company, and they wrote a report, and it got to a point where it was going to go to a tribunal. And, send all these documents were being sent to me and I had to kind of run around a lot. And I don't understand how is that meant to be saving money? Because eventually they just went, oh, yeah, you should have it. And they backdated it to like an earlier claim.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, okay, so what's money saving have you been doing?
Right. And meantime, the stress that's been put on you has probably advanced your MS. Yeah, it sounds like Social Security here.
Yeah.
That you just spurred something in my head, which is hard to do, by the way, but about relapses there. So what's the protocol for relapses? Do you just know if you're going into a relapse, they're going to put you in for steroid infusions?
The last relapse I had was 2017, and I had two pretty much on the bounce. It had been about 5 years between that and my previous relapse, and then I had two. And as I say, I'm lucky in the fact that I've got a good relationship with the neurology team at the hospital in Nottingham. So I called the MS nurses, who are amazing, an incredible resource that we've got. And I called them, described my symptoms, and said, it sounds like you're having a relapse. Mm-hmm. And I went in to see them. Now, because the NHS is quite cost conscious, they don't do the IV steroid infusions so much. Certainly, in my experience, the last couple of relapses I've had, they've not been steroid infusions. They've been steroid tablets.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Which are disgusting.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, you still got, you know, it's the metallic taste, yes, you know and love from steroid infusions, but now in a handy tablet form. Nice. You know, it's you know, and it makes everything taste like crap.
Yeah,
it makes you, true. It makes your stomach ache.
Yeah, it's great for a diet, though, I must say. But you you gain weight because of the steroids. It's just so weird. It's so weird. I don't know if you found this, but like super, super hungry, but everything tastes like shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is this?
Yeah, yeah.
This is a really bad joke.
Yeah, like, you know, Emma and my mother-in-law and my mother are coming around saying, I've made you some food. It looks lovely. It's going to taste absolutely foul. but, you know.
So true.
But God bless you. But but the steroid treatment, as I say, it's kind of, I don't really go to my GP for my steroids.
Okay.
I just go straight to the MS nurses.
Yeah.
And say, look, I think I'm having a relapse. They get you in, they assess you, and like I say, the last time it was like one course of steroids, 1 week. I went away for the weekend. I felt okay. Start going, feeling like I'm going into another relapse the week after, and they said, okay, we don't normally do this, but here's another course of steroids in tablet form, and they did the job. But you know, I don't know if that answers the question, but I think that's kind of the way it certainly works in my experience.
Yeah. Well, and I just want to act as your interpreter a little bit, because you said on the bounce, and I'm just going to take the contextual hints from that means like back-to-back relapses.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
We're divided by a joint language, aren't we?
Yes, we are. But I recognize that you speak it much better than we do. So I'm just going to leave that there. So I pay homage to you, but I just want to make sure that I'm getting that right. So
no, that's perfect.
Back to back. And I'm frankly going to try and work in on the bounce in my language today 3 times. We'll see if I can pull that off.
You let me know.
I will. So if you could change anything about diagnosis and treatment of MS in your country, what would it be? And it doesn't have to be anything, by the way. If you're happy, good on you.
I'm sort of happy with the way it was in my experience. I think there is a lot of talk at the moment. There are differences in the kind of facilities. I don't know if that's the right word I want to use, but sort of like the things that are available dependent on where you live. You know, you'd call it, you see, I can talk your language. You'd call it a zip code lottery. We call it a postcode lottery over here. And dependent on where you are, you will either have access to MS nurses and neurologists, or you have to travel a considerable distance. And I'm talking considerable distance in the UK sense, not in the, it's only a short 8-hour drive, which is what you guys say. That's basically Land's End to John O'Groats over here. But, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not doing an 8-hour drive. This is not going to happen. I'd rather fly. I think that is something that there's no sort of consistency of what. Or there can be a lack of consistency in what is available dependent on where you live, what is available to you. And I think that's the thing that bothers me. As I say, I've been incredibly lucky, but I know that not everybody is.
Yeah.
And that must be incredibly frustrating to kind of think, this is what I need. How the hell do I go about getting it?
Right. Yeah. So you would just... Yeah. Expand treatment facilities, make it available to more people. Yeah, I like that. Very kind-hearted of you, altruistic. Right. So this question has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I'm just interested. Is marijuana legal in your country and used for MS?
There have been a lot of stories about medical marijuana and the benefits thereof. A lot of like TV programs about its use in severe cases of epilepsy mm-hmm. and things like that, and the benefits that people have seen from it. It's odd. I do get some CBD oil capsules, mm-hmm. which I buy, and mm-hmm. I think I had a message from the company fairly recently to say that that type of product is now going to be classed as foodstuff rather than a medical thing. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, that means it will need to be reclassified or kind of looked into again. Mm-hmm. And then there might be mm-hmm. like an interruption in supply and that kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
But I mean, you can get it. Mm-hmm. I've asked on a few occasions if I can get it on prescription, mm-hmm. and I think it's called Sativex or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, it's difficult to get hold of. So it's just like, okay, well, I'll just buy some and see how it goes. Right. I tend to take that mostly to help with like leg spasms when I'm trying to get to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps. Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah. Ironically, my multiple sclerosis symptoms really started after I left university, and then you know, the marijuana, that question would have been completely not a problem.
Right, exactly. When you had a good line to it.
With apologies to my parents if they happen to listen to this. But you know, they know.
Right. I love it. Well, this has been so interesting. And I just think it's just eye-opening to hear what it's like to be diagnosed and treated for your disease elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm so appreciative of you sharing this time and all your brain power with me today. I really do appreciate it. And I know that a lot of people are going to find this incredibly interesting. And before we hit record today, you and I were talking and you mentioned to me that you had written an article about the NHS. And I'm wondering, would you do me the kind favor of linking that in the show notes?
Yeah, sure.
Can we put in there? That would be great, because it sounds like it was a good explanation of what NHS is. And for those of us who don't really understand it, that would be really helpful. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. No worries.
So lastly, as you are well familiar, we here in the FUMS Nation speak to the stupid disease as it deserves, and we tell it FUMS every day. So, Steve, would you please lead the charge with your middle finger extended on three? You ready?
I certainly will.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
FUMS.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Can I do an English version of it?
Please.
Because we don't really use FU over here.
Okay.
We don't really. So I'll probably just say, up yours, MS.
Up yours. What about bugger off? What is that? Now?
I do like bugger off, but
I don't even know what I'm saying. Up yours is better? Okay.
Neither of them are particularly pleasant.
No matter what we're saying the same
Sticking
thing, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I like it. All right. Thanks for that.
Thanks a lot, Kathy.
Thank you. So appreciate it. Take care.
Cheers.
Thanks, everybody. I really appreciate you listening to the FUMS podcast show. Be sure to subscribe to it so you won't miss an episode. You can do that right on the website at FUMSnow.com. While you're there, sign up for the free email list so you'll be among the first to know of any new findings in MS research, new therapies and products, as well as any blog posts and podcast episodes I release. Want to chat with others in the FUMS community? Join us on Facebook at FUMS Now. Thanks again, and don't forget to talk to the stupid disease as it deserves. Tell it FUMS every day.